You gotta operate in truth, right? Operate in truth. You know, tell the truth.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Gator Truth Florida Football Podcast. I'm Daniel, and on this episode, we're going to take a look at Florida, Georgia, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Of course, this is a big game for Billy Napier and the Gators, and it's a chance to make a statement, as at least one podcast has said, going into this game. Definitely a lot to look out for. This is a chance to get a win over the number one ranked Bulldogs. And of course, for those who may not know, the last time Georgia lost in the regular season was 2020. To the Gators. Now, could that happen this year? Sure. We're going to look at some keys to the game. We're also going to look at, well, some storylines as well. And for those of you watching on YouTube, you may be wondering, what am I wearing? This ridiculous thing I know. Well, it's part of the good vibes for the week. We'll get into that a little bit later, just like how I kind of have my 2008 Florida Georgia Cup going for this episode. With that said, let's go ahead and start looking at some of the storylines. The first storyline that I have is, has the Florida offense truly turned a corner? And what I mean by that is, we did well against South Carolina. Billy Napier and the offense looked a lot better. The question is, how much of that was South Carolina having, after the game, the worst in the nation passing yards per game average, worst pass defense, and how much of that was truly turning the corner? The answer could be a little bit of both, and we'll see that against Georgia. Now, the Gators, with having the bye week last week, could have taken the time to continue to improve on some of the stuff that we saw, improve on some play calling ideas, and even maybe one or two, you know, differences to play design. Like we talked about after the South Carolina game, just little tweaks like on the two-man route, which, you know, I've said I'm not a big fan of for quite a while now. The man, instead of just staying on the sideline, we had Wilson kind of doing a wheel-type route where he started running up the sideline. And just that little difference to that one play allowed us to get a bigger gain than had he been standing static. So with that said, has the offense turned the corner? And what are we going to see coming up against the best defense that the Gators have faced? And of course, we'll talk about the strength of the Georgia defense as we move forward. The second storyline I have is the Gators away from home. They've only won away from the Swamp twice under Billy Napier, once last year, once this year. Did that one win change everything? Are they better systematically on the road now than they had been, you know, before the trip to Columbia? We will see. And that doesn't mean necessarily that a win or a loss means that we haven't gotten better, but we will see how we come out. Do we come out looking flat? Do we come out looking motivated? Because things like that, we've seen the Gators come out looking kind of flat in a lot of these losses where they've come out looking motivated against South Carolina and won the game. So just that mindset and seeing how the team plays does go towards that. Of course, I can't talk about away from home without mentioning Georgia being, you know, so-so on the road so far in only two games away from Sanford Stadium. The first one was Auburn, which they had to come from behind to win that game. And the second one was the Vanderbilt game, where they're kind of playing it close for the first bit of that game and then pulled away later on. With that said, for that Vanderbilt game, gets us into the biggest storyline, and that is, how big is Brock Bowers, the Georgia Bulldogs tight end, being out for the game? How big is that for them as they play the Gators and have to adjust their offense moving forward, as he was their best offensive weapon? In fact, that Auburn game without Bowers, they may not have that comeback. And of course, Vanderbilt, the reason why that leads into this is he went out in that Vanderbilt game with his injury and they had to change their entire offensive philosophy. With that said, their running back, Edwards, did really well in that game. And, of course, we'll get into that as well. But that, I think, is the biggest storyline, is how big is Brock Bowers being out for the Bulldogs? Let's go ahead and take a look at the Florida offense against the Bulldogs defense. Well, Georgia is sixth in the nation in total defense. By far the best defense the Gators have faced this year. They're ninth against the pass in the nation, 10th against the run. And I think the first thing the Gators are going to need to do is pass to open up the run. One thing, and I know I've said that a lot, but one thing I've added here is I think the little pop passes will count a lot more in this game. For those that aren't sure what a pop pass is, a pop pass is when you see Pearsall, Wilson, whoever coming in motion across the line, we snap the ball, and then Mertz just tosses the ball up in their path and they catch it. Yes, that is a pass completion. But if we can get a little bit of success with those, which is what we did against Tennessee, that can widen out the box as they try and limit the edge. And if we can do that, that might get some room for the inside running game. And of course, also talking about passing to open up the run, we do need to see some more quick passing game to back off blitz, back off, you know, a stack box, because I believe Georgia is going to try and stack the box and force Graham Mertz to beat us. We need to see more of that intermediate passing game that we saw against South Carolina. You know, the passes between 10, 15, 20 yards, not necessarily deep passes, not necessarily throwing the bomb. But we can't, I don't think we're going to beat Georgia as, you know, playing like we have in some of these games where 60, 70% of our passes were completed 5 yards or under. And so we've got to hit those. And the more intermediate passes you hit, the more you've got to, you know, move linebackers in the spots and kind of shift out. And with that said, that's going to open up room for guys like Etienne, Montrell Johnson, and even some runs. I'm sure we're going to see Wilson get some runs and things like that. My main key for this offense, though, is get Etienne and Wilson the ball in space. Now, I think Pearsall's a great player, but Etienne and Wilson, what they've shown, and so far what we've seen, is if you give them a little crease, there's a chance that they could turn that small crease into 10, 11 more yards. They've shown a little bit of shiftiness where we can move, make things happen. Of course, we have other weapons coming on, which are, you know, Arliss Boardingham has really had a good few weeks coming into the game. We have Dante Zanders coming back. Not that I think he's quite the weapon that Boardingham is or could be, but that's experience. That's a guy who's played in this game several times. Speaking of guys coming back, we have Kingsley Aguakin, who is coming back at center. Although Slaughter has been one of our top-rated offensive linemen, for a center, there are other things to that, like you're helping call out protections and, you know, slide or whatever the offensive line needs to do and assisting the quarterback in that. That's something that the experience that Kingsley has that may give him an edge over Slaughter and just help this line overall. So hopefully that's going to be big for us. And of course, Andy Jean coming back. Andy Jean, a very dangerous receiver we've seen. And now we can potentially, with a little bit of these more tweaks that we've seen in the offense, seeing him, Pearsall, Wilson, you know, all out there potentially with Jackson or Boardingham, Etienne. There are a lot of guys who could be dynamic on this offense. Now it's about getting the ball in space. And again, the key, I think, is to try and find ways to get Etienne and Wilson the ball in space as they have the ability to take something that looks like it's not going for long and make a decent to big play out of that. Let's go ahead and move. Oh, and then one more thing. Sorry, before we move. I know it's been said by several people, including Josh Pate of CBS 24/7 Sports. You know, he's brought up, and I know other people have brought up, I was on the Doghouse podcast, a Georgia football podcast, and he brought it up. Trey there, shout out to him, brought up how Florida's offense is in the hundreds in third down percentage. Georgia's the number one third down percentage defense. I do think some of that is based off of who Georgia's played outside of Kentucky. I mean, they've played Auburn on the road, but Auburn isn't too great of a team, in my opinion. Their home atmosphere definitely boosted that game and has boosted them in a few games. And, you know, Kentucky, who's a decent team, I think we should have done better against them, but is what it is. But I think that helps boost their third down percentage. And also, I think a mindset that we had early on in the season, which was some of these third and shorters, like third and five, being seen as two down rather than trying to get the first down on third down and thinking, let's just get close so we can go for it on fourth down. I believe that was kind of a mindset at times. South Carolina, we saw, let's just try and get the first down, even on plays where it was third and long, where we did try and move the ball downfield, and we got some key field goals at least out of that. So with that said, I do think it's going to be quite a difficult task for this offense to get those third downs, but I don't think it's quite as lopsided as the statistics would show you. Moving on to the Gators defense against the Bulldogs offense. If you think of the Bulldogs offense, you're probably thinking of guys like Terrell Davis and Knowshon Moreno, Todd Gurley, Nick Chubb. You're probably thinking of Georgia's offense is predicated on the run, and they run, 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 run. Well, this third total offense, they're fifth in pass in the nation. Number five, the best passing offense that we've seen statistically so far, and only 47th in the nation in the run game. Now, part of that is one of their key running backs and probably their best running back, Kendall Milton, has been hampered with an injury. However, there is still plenty of danger as Milton is getting healthier, and they have guys like Dejan Edwards, who so far this season has averaged 5.8 yards per carry. The first thing I think the Gators need to do is to stop that passing game. Again, it's the best passing game we've faced so far. We're going to have to find ways to do that. It is Georgia's primary offense. Again, going back to, we can think about the past Georgia teams and how it was all the running game. You stop the running game and they're going to have a difficult time. That is not this Georgia team. We're going to have to stop the pass first, or at least slow it down. And if we can do that, then we're going to have to do some solid tackling. Talking about the Kentucky game, they ran for over 300 yards on us. Ray Davis over 280 yards, I believe. And many times in that game, not always, but many times we had a guy who could have made a play and just didn't, or poor tackling. So we do need to have solid tackling. Like I said, Dejan Edwards, 5.8 yards per carry this season. Kendall Milton, he's coming back healthy. So we've got to be solid. And if we can be solid in tackling, then we're going to have a lot better chance at pulling the upset. Definitely got to stop or slow down that passing game and then solid tackling in the running game. I do think that one of the keys is to pressure Carson Beck, the Georgia quarterback. Beck has had a good season so far. You got to give credit where credit's due. Come in, it's his first year starting in college. He has done very well for the Bulldogs. Again, top five passing attack with a guy making his first year starting in college. With that said, he's been great at home. On the road, again, on the road at Auburn, on the road at Vandy, he's only got two touchdowns and two interceptions on the road this year. I know that this isn't a true road game, but it is something to keep an eye on. A big misnomer when we let Spencer Rattler get a lot of yards on us against South Carolina is we didn't get pressure on him. There are plenty of times we pressured and didn't get home. So I really think we need to not only get pressure and get home, but definitely get some pressure on Beck. That pressure could speed up his clock as he's not super experienced. That is the time where you can make guys make errant throws. An experienced guy like Spencer Rattler, he may not speed up his clock with a little bit of pressure. You've got to get home to him. Meanwhile, a guy like Beck, again, not many starts, not much experience. If you can at least get him pressure, get him off of his, drop back count, off of his rhythm. Then that's times maybe he makes a errant decision or an errant throw, and hopefully we can take advantage of that. We cannot have any mental mistakes, as we've seen sometimes, and we definitely need to do a good job covering the receivers for Georgia, such as Dominic Lovett, who was great last year at Mizzou, and then has come and hasn't had the best year this year for the Bulldogs so far. But when you're playing second fiddle to Brock Bowers, who was just such a great weapon for them, and luckily he will not be in this game for the Gators. Hope he gets better. I'm not celebrating the injury. But when you don't have that big weapon in front of you, now it's time for a guy like that, who was one of the best receivers in the SEC last year. I wish we had gone after him in the transfer portal. Now it's a time for a guy like that to show up and show why he was such a big deal transferring in from Mizzou. But if we can get the pressure and stop Beck from getting the ball out, again, things that give the Gators a better chance against the Bulldogs. Moving on, instead of a truth be told, last year during the bye week, I kind of gave some of my favorite games, some of my favorite Gator memories, but I didn't touch the Florida-Georgia game. I said I'd do that at a different time. Now, there's a little bit of a theme here with these. See if you can get what it is. These are games that I have attended and had some great memories. Maybe you remember these games. Maybe you should look them up afterwards if you haven't, because they're full of fun. And I will go through these real quick. And again, it leads into some of my thoughts on the final score and stuff of this game in some ways. First game I ever attended for Florida-Georgia, 1993, last game in the old Gator Bowl before they renovated it. And I believe it was High Top Sports. Check this out if you haven't. High Top Sports this week, I believe they actually watched this game, did a watch through or discuss this game, watch the press conferences. This game came down to the wire at the end. Georgia scores, think they've tied up the game, except for the Gators had called a timeout right before the play. Gators get the stop, get the win in one of the wettest, muddiest games of all time. I've talked to a guy who is a manager for the Gators team at the time, and he talked about how much of a pain it was to get all the mud out, but how great it was to have that win over Georgia. And it was such a great game for my first Florida-Georgia game I attended the next year. Again, soaking game, 1994 in the swamp, big win for the Gators. I remember this as a kid just loving it. Definitely check out the highlights. Big fumble recovery right before halftime. Check it out. For sure, great game. 1999, we win the game. If you're watching on you, or if you're watching this on YouTube, you see that I've nicknamed this the Cotton Candy Game. Well, the Cotton Candy Game, the reason why I reference that is, and this is more of just a family memory, Florida's got a very small lead, and yeah, I believe it's in the fourth quarter. And I've watched this clip this week. My aunt sees this cotton candy vendor walking up and down the aisle, and she says to our group, "Man, I really want cotton candy." And my other uncle, who's married to my other aunt, says, "If you get us a touchdown, I'll go get you cotton candy." Well, on that drive, the Gators scored on the third play. Bo Carroll, 31-yard touchdown run to make it up to a 2-score lead. My uncle runs down the aisle, and if you've ever been to the stadium in Jacksonville, there's a little ring that goes throughout the inside of the stadium that you can run around. Granted, with the club seats now, it's a little bit harder to do all the way around. But anyways, he runs, and the cotton candy guy had made it to Georgia territory. And of course, Florida fans still, going nuts, screaming about that touchdown. He's over in Georgia territory, buys the cotton candy, holds it up like an Olympic torch, and goes running through Georgia territory back to us, and was one of the best purchases of the day and one of the most fun memories I have of the Florida-Georgia game. And of course, 2008. Again, I've got my 2008 cup right here. And, you know, 2007, Georgia has that ridiculous celebration, sending the whole team on the field when they score the first touchdown. Back and forth game. Georgia pulls it out in the end. And you can go watch Swamp Kings. You can find all sorts of things about how this motivated the 2008 team. And this was the game they really circled. And, of course, Brandon Spikes setting the tone from the beginning. One of my favorite memories from this game, though, is about 5-6 minutes left. My cousin's wife, myself, we all run from the away side because on the even years, the Gators are away. Both teams enter from the home side. We run down, get to the front row of the away of the home side because all the Georgia fans have left, line up and end up, you know, greeting the players after the game. We're all excited. I actually missed the first timeout or two, didn't realize Urban Meyer had taken the timeouts, and then realized it with the last few. And it was just a great feeling. Big win for the Gators, possibly a lot of people's favorite Florida Georgia game. And then, of course, 2014. And this is where I want to talk about this game. 2014, I was talking about Will from South Carolina, Will in South Carolina. Well, going into the game, he's saying, we're going to win this game. And we're kind of like, listen, we got a true freshman, Treon Harris, starting. We're probably not winning this game. Georgia is such a great team. We're not pulling the upset. Like, there's just a big, we're going to cheer on the Gators, hope we pull the upset, but we're not going to get our hopes up. And Will was just like, no, we're winning this game. And so I've got to give him props. He's probably going to text me when he hears this. But anyways, so before the game, we go and Fred Taylor, David Green, former Georgia quarterback, are doing this trivia challenge. And during the trivia challenge, I actually get one of the questions right. We get to meet Fred Taylor, and I actually have him sign this hat that I have right there for those watching on YouTube. And I remember as he was signing it, we asked him, hey, when's Kelvin, his son, going to get more carries? He's like, well, he'll get them at some point. Gives a very professional answer, not so much the dad answer that you'd maybe get, like, oh, my son needs more carries. Well, Kelvin got a lot of carries that day, and we had two backs go over 100 yards. I think they both went over 150. Ridiculous day. Gators pull off the upset 38-20, and it reminds you that anything can happen in this game. Sometimes the records don't matter. Sometimes it's all about just the power of belief, and you never know what's going to happen. That game, I think we only threw 5-6 passes, and we won the game by 18 points. And so that's why I'm wearing this hat, for the good vibes, and of course the 2008, because it was one of the big wins. With that said, a few years ago I tweeted this. Could have worded it better, but I'm going to say it here. If you're going to the game, get behind your team and show them that you believe they can do it. Because if you believe, show them that you believe they can do it, that helps their belief that they can do it. And if they believe, anything can happen. And so let's get behind them. Let's get loud. I'll be there. If you're there, get loud as well. Let's have some fun. And you know what? Doesn't matter that Georgia's not lost a game in the regular season since 2020. It doesn't matter that Georgia all statistically should beat us. It doesn't matter that there's a talent gap. As you know, as I've said on Doghouse, as I've said otherwise, you know, other places, I'm not picking against the Gators. There's always hope. I think with the return of Kingsley, Andy Jean, the continued evolution of this offense since that Kentucky game, and with just having Georgia trying to figure out and navigate a world without Brock Bowers, I do think this gives the Gators a chance. 14.5 point underdogs, I think they can somehow pull it off. Let's go ahead and go for a 2006 Florida Tennessee score, Gators 21, Bulldogs 20. That's my prediction. And I do believe that there is a chance. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's the best chance in the world. I'm not here going to tell you that, you know, we're going to go out there, blow them out. But I'm going to say I'm going to be in the stands. I'm going to be cheering for four quarters. And I say, if you're going to be there, you do that as well. If you're watching from home, cheer for four quarters. Let's have some fun. Let's see a game where if people end up not going, they say, man, I wish I would have gone. Let's see one of the great upsets in Gators history. And with that said, thank you all for listening. And as always, okay.